Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
So it does seem to be a sleepy Friday overall, though you are seeing some material action in the oil market, as Joe and I and Amy were mentioning, with prices lower despite the fact that the president is accusing Iran of violating the ceasefire in the Strait of Hormuz. As he says, the U.S. shot down three one-way attack drones, but of course a fourth hit a ship that was still able to continue on, but nonetheless reignited some concern yesterday over the ability for ships to transit the Strait of Hormuz after it, of course, had been declared open via this memorandum of understanding. And we still have major outstanding questions as well, Joe, about whether or not fees or tolls are going to be imposed by Iran and Oman. The different sides are saying different things about that in particular.
That's for sure. Fees, the word that Iran likes to use here. Service fees, I think, is what we're calling
it. For administration.
Yeah. It's like when you check into the hotel, who made that reference, you get the spa charge, whether you use it or not. But there are three routes that are emerging here in the Strait. And the U.S. is trying to keep its own under control here, but this is an indefinite presence of our military, it seems, in that part of the world.
Yeah, and for how long is that going to be deemed sustainable when, of course, the Pentagon is already requesting tens of billions of dollars more in funding from Congress for what has already taken place in the Middle East as we question the future?
I've heard about this from President Trump. He was speaking at the Rose Garden Club just last evening about the status of talks. This is before the Truth Post earlier today. Listen.
They want to make a deal with us very badly, and we probably will. I think we will. But the Strait is open. Yesterday, they took out 19 million barrels of oil. That's the most in the history of the Strait. And the oil prices are dropping like a rock. And, you know, as goes oil, so goes everything else.
That's the idea. And oil is lower, $69 for WTI. And that's despite the news here with the president saying, quote, this is a foolish violation of our ceasefire agreement. Bloomberg Washington correspondent Tyler Kendall joins us right now in studio here in Washington with the latest. Tyler, is this a one-off post or could there be a change here in the Strait?
We're going to have to see how it evolves because this does mark the first such attack that we've seen since the memorandum of understanding was signed. President Trump giving us a little bit more details here beyond what we had been tracking last night when this news broke. He says that the U.S. was able to intercept three out of four of these drones, but that one ultimately hit this vessel, though damage was sustained. It was still able to continue transiting through. But you hit on a really key point, Joe, that I've been following closely here, which is that this attack happened in one of those routes that's considered to be the safer route. It's that corridor that hugs the Oman coast where the U.S. really has some leverage and control over. So in some regard, this has perhaps undermined some of the confidence. Bloomberg News was able to review a message that one major oil company did send its vessels to say, hold put for now. We saw the UN's global shipper say that they're going to, for now, suspend evacuation operations in the wake of this. But still, the data analyzed is showing us that it's not really having that big of an impact. Ships are still making their way ultimately through the Strait.
Okay. Well, and of course, there's the question on whether, in order to guarantee safe transit through the Strait, ships eventually are going to have to pay. Bloomberg is reporting that Oman is telling European officials that there's no way of going back to the pre-war status quo in the Strait of Hormuz and that transiting ships may have to be charged some fees. You questioned the president about this directly at the G7, and he made it pretty clear he did not want fees associated. The Secretary of State has said the same thing. So where's the disconnect here?
I was going to bring that up just last night. We had Marco Rubio reiterating to reporters that that's not going to be ultimately an option, but it's very clear that it's top of mind for Iran. Earlier this week, it really came to the forefront because we saw Iran release this joint statement with Oman saying that they were working out some sort of fee structure, navigational fees, environmental fees along those lines. I think the Secretary of State said ultimately it would be semantics in his words, but any such charging of passage wouldn't be acceptable. But pair that with the Wall Street Journal report that I know we spoke yesterday yesterday about on this program that Iran's estimating it could bring in $40 billion worth of revenue each year. But not only that, they're potentially going to pitch this to other countries in the Middle East, maybe even China, to share in on the costs, but also the profit of operating such a system. It leaves a lot of big open questions. Maybe that's the most contentious point right now. But then also, as you both know, we're tracking very closely. President Trump last night doubling down that unfrozen Iranian assets are going to go towards U.S. farmers. That's the latest that we've also heard from Iran disputing that that's something on the table.
Fascinating. Before we bring in the Congresswoman, Tyler, what's going on with this latest tariff threat? European countries discussing, he says, the imminent implementation of a digital services tax on American companies. To Kaylee's point, some already have this. Let this statement serve to represent any country imposing such a tax will immediately be met with a 100% tariff on everything. On what grounds would that be made?
If I could take an educated guess here, I would assume that the president is teeing up something under Section 301. Okay. We know the administration actually already has investigations from the first Trump term under Section 301, which is investigation into alleged unfair trade practices. Huh. And we've seen them before pull on investigations from the first Trump term and essentially repurpose them here. Typically, these investigations take 9 months, but they're able to essentially expedite that process if the work has already been done. Mm-hmm. Section 301 is a very malleable tariff, I think it's fair to say. It can go up to 100%. There's no cap. And it also can be done indefinitely. You have to review it every 4 years. But it would make sense. Maybe he's leaning towards that. Whether or not this is a negotiating tactic, I mean, you mentioned I was at the G7 last week. He said 100% tariffs on French wine if France doesn't drop it. Quickly, I will add, once we have seen a country drop it, that was Canada last year during the negotiations. They chose not to collect revenue. So,
wow, fascinating.
Maybe it'll work.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see. We've seen 100% tariffs threatened before, and they actually became reality. So, to some extent, we have to keep history in mind here. Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall, our Washington correspondent.
Tyler,
thank you very much. And for another perspective now, we turn to Democratic Congresswoman Madeleine Dean, who represents Pennsylvania's 4th District and serves on the House Foreign Affairs and Appropriations Committees. Congresswoman, welcome back to Balance of Power. I would love to begin with you on what we were just discussing with Tyler regarding the president accusing Iran of violating the ceasefire in a way that he says was foolish. If this was a ceasefire violation, should the United States do something about it?
Well, what I wish we had were diplomats actually negotiating the ceasefire. I'm sure by now everybody has read the 14-point MOU and how weak it is, how clearly drafted by Iran and for Iran that it is. And it was only a memo to talk more, to negotiate more. And we do not have solid diplomats on the ground doing the work, the difficult, complex work of negotiating the ceasefire. What we also see, and it was part of your last conversation, is just the chaos of this president, the whiplash that you can get from listening to him from 1 hour to the next, whether it is on signing bills that have been passed in a bipartisan way, like the housing bill, or about the ceasefire in Iran. Think about it. This war that was named Epic Fury has actually been an epic failure. And I say that with no pleasure. Obviously, our men and women of the military have been exquisite. But we have lost 13 members of the military. Hundreds have been wounded. More than $150 billion, at least, has been expended. Our munitions are low. The president's now asking for a supplemental, even as he asks for more than $1 trillion in a defense budget. The president's chaotic moves, whether it's domestic or it is international and a question of war and peace, frankly, have been very hard to follow and very hard to support. That's a serious problem for this country.
You're on the Foreign Affairs Committee, as has been mentioned, Congresswoman, and I'm just wondering what you guys talk about. And is it Democrats in one circle and Republicans in another? The stories that we keep hearing are that you're not being briefed by the administration, that you didn't even see this MOU until it was already signed? Or has it brought Democrats and Republicans together somehow because you're all living in the dark?
I didn't see it until it was leaked and picked up by the press. We have not had a briefing from the administration. We haven't had a briefing on the on the war, on the so-called epic fury, let alone on what would be a ceasefire and hopefully peace in the Middle East, and a restoration of some economic ability to recover the economy by this administration. After all, what is going on in my district, what my constituents care about, are the issues of war and peace. They also care about the issues of costs. Everything the president has done has driven up costs. Originally with his reckless tariffs, and here you hear him threatening them again, 100% on you, 100% on you. But then his chaotic and inhumane immigration policy. I'd love to talk to you about my visits to both Dilley and the economic impact. Dilley, Texas, and to Moshannon in Pennsylvania, these for-profit detention camps, some holding children for months, terrorizing whole families. We have not been briefed. The president and his team have not briefed us. Secretary Hegseth has not come forward to either the appropriations or the foreign affairs committees. This is an administration, sadly, out of its depth, following an emperor who has no clothes and has shown it over and over again. And it is very dangerous for our national security and extremely harmful to our economy.
Well, you mentioned Secretary Hegseth not coming before the Appropriations Committee. We have seen a supplemental budget request handed down that includes almost $70 billion for the Pentagon and much money for other things, including Ebola response and aid to farmers, for example. What would the consequence be for our national security if the Pentagon doesn't need or doesn't get the funding it says it needs?
Well, I'm looking at this list from the supplemental from the White House ask. $67 billion for the war, $1.4 billion for Ebola, $11 billion for farmers, $1 billion for Penn Station, and $770 million for Department of Energy security issues. What would it mean? How about they release the $100 billion? I'm in touch with the defense industry. $100 billion from last year's big, beautiful bill. How about this administration doing its job appropriately in a straightforward fashion, even with bills that I didn't approve of, but he got them signed into law? Why are they asking for a supplemental when they have not released $100 billion worth of defense spending from his big, beautiful bill? And it's very jarring because, as you know, this week we just marked up our final appropriations bill, the 12th of 12, in the House. And it is the defense bill. For the first time in history, they have asked for more than $1 trillion in defense spending. So why in God's name would we ever need another supplemental for this failed war?
There are questions as an appropriator, Congresswoman, about what's going to happen in September. There are questions about this defense bill if the Save America Act is attached to it. But what do you think about the narrative right now that Chuck Schumer, that possibly Hakeem Jeffries, maybe yourself, will not be able to vote for a budget in time to fulfill our requirements in the next fiscal year, and we could have a shutdown ahead of the midterms?
I hope we never have another shutdown. There is absolutely no reason for it. We have, as appropriators, have been doing our job. The Senate needs to get doing theirs. Then the four corners need to come together. But the administration has to actually govern. And remember, we have a shutdown again. Shutdown is the wrong term. The week collapsed underneath the chaotic behavior of the president failing to sign the housing bill and trying to attach this falsely named Save America bill, a voter suppression bill. And what happened with the Speaker of the House? He said, sent us all home early because he could not govern. He could not get a rule passed so that legislation could move forward. We should never have another shutdown. But if we do, take a look at who's in power. In the presidency, Republicans. In the House, Republicans. In the Senate, Republicans. And now we saw yesterday with some of the releases of the Supreme Court decision, Republican-appointed justices. They're in full control. They should be able to make sure we have a budget and no one suffers a shutdown.
It's good to have you back, Congresswoman. Come see us when you get back to Washington. From Pennsylvania's 4th District, Democratic Congresswoman Madeleine Dean. Kaylee, we should note, the president actually turned some fire on Republicans over this whole situation involving the House on Truth Social. He said House Republicans should unify, stop voting down rules or threatening to do so, knowing that there is a stoppage of all business on the floor right now, thanks to one Republican member.
Yeah, Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna wants to see the Senate act on the Save America Act. Mm-hmm. So she's stopping action on the floor of the House. Not sure that's going to compel the Senate to do anything, but it certainly makes the job of the Speaker much harder, which is why he had to dispatch himself to the White House yesterday to talk to Trump about it, try to get Trump to do a little public leaning on this particular member, perhaps.
Well, we're still here.
We'll
have a lot more with our panel. They're here too. Rick and Jeannie next, only on Bloomberg.
Stay with us on Balance of Power. We'll have much more coming up after this.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
The president upping the ante. We got to figure out how to get in this thing, right? Can we get in one of these airplanes? The president just posted on Truth Social that the 4th of July air show, which was already scheduled, will be the biggest by far in the history of the United States of America. Hundreds of planes, he says, different types, sizes, speeds will be on display. This is like a 10-hour... from 1 in the afternoon, 11:30 at night. I gotta see this as somebody who stops down for air shows. Are we talking an air show here or just a lot of flybys? There's a big difference. I was lucky enough to fly with the Thunderbirds once in an F-16. Out at Nellis Air Force Base. Broke the sound barrier. Pulled 9 Gs. Lost my lunch. I'm not looking to do that again. Put me in a big slow, like a C-130 or something. I want to see the mall from up there. We'll get a camera. You think Kaylee would go? She's probably got a cookout. You know, we came in today on this Friday thinking, gosh, maybe there are slow news days left. There's nothing going on. Maybe we have some big think conversations with Rick and Jeannie. But then, of course, as we walk in the studio, news breaks. And today, once again, it was from the president of the United States. And we're back to Iran. If you're just joining us, we talked to the admiral about this. It's an important development here as he accuses Iran of breaching the ceasefire. Iran shot at least 4 one-way attack drones, he says, at ships traversing the Strait of Hormuz. One of them hit the upper deck, large, very expensive cargo-carrying ship. Damage was done. We knocked out the 3 other drones. I'm skipping down here a little. Obviously, quote, this is a foolish violation of our ceasefire agreement, unquote. What now? Bloomberg Politics contributors Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano join. Rick is back, our Republican strategist and partner at Stone Court Capital. Good to see you, my friend. And Jeannie is, of course, our Democratic analyst and democracy visiting fellow at Harvard Kennedy School's Ash Center. Rick, this isn't enough to go back to war over, is it? The admiral a short time ago, Mark Montgomery, suggested it was not. But this is so delicate that I wonder your thoughts on whether it could be different this time.
Yeah, I think all the pressure is to keep the negotiations going on. All the pressure is to try and keep the flow of oil coming out of the Gulf. And there'll be a lot of willingness to look the other way, to not overreact. Okay.
Sorry, Rick, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. And so, I think, you know, when you look at what the incentives are, I think, you know, people are going to look the other way. And even the president's own comments sounded downright at ease with it. Oh, yeah, you know, this happened, but we're not going to retaliate. We're not going to blink. We don't want that flow of oil to stop. So I think we're in for a period of time where we're going to have a lot of different obstacles to choose from. In the Gulf, you know, the Iranians are going to constantly test our resolve. They'll test the resolve of other allies in the region. And I think this administration says, look, we got to push through. We got 60 days to get a deal. Let's get the deal done.
60 days, Jeannie. Although Mark Montgomery said a little while ago, you could have 3 or 4 of those 60 day periods to get you past November, at which point the president's, what did he say, his decision making matrix? I love it when military guys start with the jargon like that. Things could feel different after November. Is that right, Jeannie? You don't want to go to war for the next couple of months. Maybe we do hit a deal, but if we don't, we'll meet you in December. What do you think?
I think that Donald Trump is not going to do much. You know, oil, you were just talking about, Joe, down around, what, $69? He's going to bloviate. Yeah. He's going to bluster. He's going to complain. But you're absolutely right. Nothing he can do before November. And you know who knows that? Iran. Hmm. This is the same situation we've been in. They are holding all the cards. Donald Trump is playing catch up. And if you listen to Iran, what are they saying? The ceasefire has been broken repeatedly, given what is going on with Hezbollah and Israel in Lebanon. So Donald Trump, we're going to hear a lot about these kinds of statements, frustration, but there's nothing he can do. The ceasefire is fragile and he's got no options now. And he knows it, to his credit, but to proceed forward and try to get an agreement. And of course, 60 days isn't going to be enough. It's going to be a number of 60-day periods, but certainly nothing pertaining to like we saw in February before November.
Before we move on to something else, Rick, what do you make of the market reaction or the lack of reaction? This is pretty amazing. I mean, I realize it's been a couple of months of, you know, on again, off again. The market just doesn't seem to even care anymore. The president posts something like this. You've got crude oil down 4%. We're at $69 a barrel. We were at 67 before this thing started. Has Wall Street just moved on?
Well, I think they feel like the commitment is there to keep the flow of oil, and the president isn't dissuading them. If he'd have said, hey, I'm bottling it up again because we got to teach Iran a lesson, I think you'd have seen a different reaction. And that's the kind of things he was saying and doing just a month ago.
Right.
So
okay.
I think we've seen a sea change in policy. Policy will dictate some of what Wall Street feels about this. Before, Wall Street thought we're in the middle of a war and everything goes. Now we're in the middle of trying to make peace, and stability should reign supreme. So I can't imagine a scenario right now without all-out war breaking out again, which is in nobody's interest, that the markets don't sort of set this aside and say, call us when something really good or really bad happens.
Well, it's unclear when J.D. Vance is going to be heading back overseas, assuming this stays in Switzerland or whatever we do here. He's still the point man on negotiations. We do not have a date or I think even a suggestion that there'll be a second round of talks. He is making news, however, about a very different topic. And curious that he would pick this one to go after, Jeannie. J.D. Vance spoke at the Richard Nixon Presidential Library out in California. You've both probably been there. The headlines that came from it, though, are fascinating. As I read in the Washington Post, Vance dismisses Watergate scandal, says deep state went after Nixon. Vice president says he admired Nixon, drew parallels between the past president who resigned in 1974 and Trump today. All of it out loud. Listen to what he said.
If Watergate happened tomorrow, it would be like a 12-hour news story. Like the idea that it would have taken down a presidency is crazy. And by the way, if you look at the story of how the deep state took down Richard Nixon, it's not all that different from what the same groups of people, the same institutions tried to do to Donald Trump in the first Trump administration. There is a parallel.
Wow. Look, it's one thing to try to express sympathy for Richard Nixon, maybe even the deep state, whatever you want to do, but to then compare him to your current boss is a strange move to make. Unless there is a parallel, Jeannie, what do you make of this?
Yeah. And Joe, I have a question. Is he comparing Donald Trump to Nixon or is he comparing himself, a vice president, you know, surrounded by corruption,
ooh,
who doesn't do so well in 60, but comes back strong. So I don't know, J.D. Vance,
wow,
in 2038 or whatever it is. It is insane to sort of tease out why he decided to talk at the library about Watergate in this way. What political benefit is this to J.D. Vance, except, of course, saying, I too can come back. But Joe, this has been such an awkward, cringeworthy rollout of his book tour. I'm sure you saw the knee tap that was heard around the world with his lovely wife. I mean, from start to finish, this thing has been awkward. So, you know, I'm stunned he raised it. And then again, looking at the knee tap, and if people haven't seen it, you got to Google it. It's all a little bit cringeworthy, so I'm not surprised.
Jeannie always comes prepared, I swear. like, Rick, I don't know. I'm not sure what to say about the book tour here. But why call out your boss and compare him to the only president who had to resign in scandal? It's not just, of course, the break-in and the plumbers and all that. It's the enemies list, the tapes, the anti-Semitic stuff. I mean, how do we frame this?
Well, I don't want to look past the midterms, but I, for one, am really excited about the 2028 presidential cycle, because if we can get this every day of that cycle, I mean, it will be a circus. And I want a ticket to that. Look, I mean, this portends a really significant thing, which is the culture and values we had in the 1970s is not the culture and values we have today. I mean, these are guys who, you know, they are sending messages out to QAnon. They believe in conspiracy theories. You know, they purge the Justice Department in order to go after their enemies. I mean, an enemies list with Nixon was horrible. Yeah. And an enemies list in the Trump administration is applauded at every rally. He even names names. I mean, Nixon, you had to uncover this to find out who his enemies were. Trump just tells you, I'm going after this list of people. And so I do think it's something worth really understanding as to how different the political culture is today. And what Vance said is unfortunately the truth, which is things that were the violation of the law, the president using, you know, money to silence people, burglaries to, you know, try and win elections, would not actually rise to the level of an impeachment session in the Congress even today. So I think it's actually a really sad moment because I think what he's saying is more true than not, and it's a horrible thing.
Wow. I'm so glad we brought this up. Then you guys are dead on here. Is there truth, as Rick is saying, Jeannie? What was the line? If Watergate happened tomorrow, it would be like a 12-hour news story. Is that the case?
I think it might be, but probably because we are now desensitized to the level of corruption. What is not true, and I think has to have his Yale professors of history sort of scratching their heads, I think he needs to go back to Yale and take another history class, is that the deep state was going after Nixon. Quite the contrary. It was Nixon using the deep state, and the history is clear on this. This has been vetted. This has been proven. He was trying to use the deep state to go after his political opponents. And guess what? It's the same thing Donald Trump is doing. You know, as we're all just reading through the new Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan book, there's a point there in which Donald Trump is talking about Jerome Powell and says in very colorful, off-putting language that I'll leave to you, Joe. You know, I want his effing something. And they talk about the fact that he is, you know, wants to go after him. He wants to make his life miserable, and he's going to do that any way he can. Can we use this building? Can we use the DOJ? I mean, this is what he's talking about. So, you know, J.D. Vance is trying to say that this is a deep state conspiracy on both sides. It wasn't true about Nixon. It's not true here. And we should all rewatch one of my favorite movies, All the President's Men, this weekend. A great movie, great book, too.
It's so good.
And go for journalists.
It's so good.
It's so good.
So well made. To Jeannie's point, J.D. Vance musing on his own similarities to Nixon, quote, young senator, vice president, writes some best-selling books, is hated by media. Kind of sounds like J.D. Vance, he said. I've always liked Richard Nixon. Our great panel is with us here on the Friday edition.
Stay with us on Balance of Power. We'll have much more coming up after this.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Friday trade starting to improve here. Maybe we'll be in better shape as we get closer to the bell. We'll see. The news might impact this, although so far no one seems to be blinking at what's coming out of Iran. The president's saying that they violated the ceasefire after shooting at a boat yesterday. We told you about this. WTI is still below $70 a barrel. Pretty remarkable. The president making news on a couple of fronts here. Bear with me before we bring in the admiral. Numerous European countries, he just went up on this with Truth Social, have been discussing the imminent implementation of a digital services tax on American companies. You've heard him talk about this before. Some of these countries are close to actually doing this. Please let this statement serve to represent that any country that imposes such a tax, are you ready? Will immediately be met with a 100% tariff on any and all goods sent to the United States. 100%. The tariff, he says, will supersede trade deals made with that country, whether implemented, signed, or not. Additionally, a 100% tariff will be immediately imposed if they proceed. So you got that. Now you got the ceasefire. This also came from Truth Social. We actually haven't heard the president talk yet today. He says Iran shot at least 4 one-way attack drones at ships traversing the Strait of Hormuz. One of the drones solidly hit the upper deck of a large and very expensive cargo-carrying ship. Damage done, he says. The ship was able to proceed on its way. We knocked down 3 other drones. A foolish violation of our ceasefire agreement. We talked about Iran in the Rose Garden. I should call it the Rose Garden Club, right? Last evening, flanked by the American flags. Listen.
They want to make a deal with us very badly, and we probably will. I think we will. But the strait is open. Yesterday, they took out 19 million barrels of oil. That's the most in the history of the strait. And the oil prices are dropping like a rock. And, you know, as goes oil, so goes everything else.
Well, and oil is lower still today. Deeply curious to hear what the admiral has to think. We're lucky to have him back today. Retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, former destroyer squadron commander, U.S. Navy senior fellow of the Center on Cyber and Technology Innovation Foundation for Defense of Democracies. It's great to see you, sir. Welcome back to Bloomberg. When you hear the president say something like this and you now confirm the attack on the cargo ship, does it make you think we're going back to war?
This is a complex issue. I think as a military officer, I would recommend a proportionate counterstrike against the drone launching areas of the IRGC, you know, in around Bandar Abbas, or around the Strait of Hormuz. But politically, the president really wants this peace deal to proceed, you know, the negotiations to proceed. I think he'll probably, my gut reaction is he'll let this one go. Look, what we're talking about here is the Southern Transit scheme, the one we've been using since about April 2nd. We were getting through about 1 million or 2 million barrels a day. So the ceasefire was signed. Then it was about 9 million barrels a day. As the president said, it was a big day yesterday. I'm not sure it was a record. I think I've seen higher numbers than that. But in any case, back to normal flow yesterday. This is a transit scheme generally mine swept by the United States, protected by U.S. aircraft and ships on the edges of it. But, you know, clearly, you know, it's shot down a lot of drones over the last, 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. But clearly one here got through, hit a ship. The good news is, as he averred to there, many of the drones have small explosive amounts in them. So if they hit a superstructure, the top part of a ship, known as a superstructure, mm-hmm. you can get the fire out quick, then the damage is minimal to moderate.
Iran seems convinced it's going to be able to charge fees. We don't call them tolls, which is a little bit too cute for most people, Admiral. But I'm wondering what you see as the future for the Strait. Could we be in a world where these three separate routes are maintained by three separate entities?
No, I don't think so. I think, look, if they decide to charge transit scheme through the northern transit lane, the one between Iranian islands and Iran, they may be able to get away with that. But what will happen is the only ships that will go through there are the ones going to Iranian ports. And then one's going to other ports, you know, Qatar, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, will go through the Southern Transit Scheme. I think we can keep Oman from violating international law and going along with Iran. But that's going to mean a lot of talks with Oman. But I also tell you, the other big deal is the Saudis are going to build a second cross peninsula from east to west pipeline. Yeah. As is the United Arab Emirates, a second one down to Fujairah outside the Strait of Hormuz. And, you know, they're not limited by like environmental impact statements and OSHA and EPA. They're going to be built fast. And once they do it, in a weird way, by this overplay by Iran, they're frittering away their leverage. This leverage will expire when more pipelines are complete.
Fascinating. Could we end up in a world, and I know you're not an energy analyst, Admiral, but you sure seem to know what you're talking about every time we get together on this, when it comes to the oil industry, could we be in a world where we create an irrelevant Strait of Hormuz? Can you reroute that much oil?
So I think I'd have to separate it to crude, other oils, LNG, liquefied natural gas, and fertilizer. The other ones, the non-crude, are going to probably still have to come to the Strait. So I wouldn't call it irrelevant, but I would call it less urgent, or there's a lower ability to drive an international crisis, because as we found out during this, there are other sources of LNG, particularly the United States, can step in. We may be slightly more expensive than Kuwaiti or Qatari LNG, but when we're available, we're 100% available, because no one's blockading our ports.
What's your thought on the status of our armada, of this massive fleet that we have that was conducting the blockade? Of course, we've had multiple carrier strike groups there. We've got, I think, 50,000 men and women still in the region. And we know that a lot of these deployments are extended. We've talked about this before, Admiral. Do they all need to stay in place for the balance of this 60-day period?
Yes, and probably beyond. You know, there's going to be about four 60-day periods to get us at least past early to mid-November, and then the president might have a different decision-making matrix. But I would tell you, maybe a more aggressive decision-making matrix. But the aircraft, the Air Force squadrons that are on the Arabian Peninsula, and the two Navy carrier strike groups, and the 17 or 18 destroyers are all critical. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to maintain those, but we'll rotate the actual ships through there. Okay. We have 80 destroyers in the Navy, only 17 are there. So we have an ability to do that. I will tell you, if this goes on more than another 6 months, there will be a long-term impact. The Navy will be able to do the mission for the next year and a half. But then 3 years from now, the Navy and the Air Force fighter squadrons that are also playing in this are going to have a significant readiness ding.
How's morale out there? What are you hearing from your contacts?
Look, they want to be on. I have lots of friends out there, relatives. They want to be on mission. Every military soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, Guardian wants to be on mission. The ones in the Arabian Gulf, the ones in the Arabian Peninsula are on mission. So I think morale is, as one would expect, high at getting to execute mission.
Wow. We're so lucky to have this incredible volunteer military force. Admiral, I have to ask you about reports this week. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth forced out the man who many people know as the last American service member on the ground in the evacuation of Kabul. There was a very famous night vision photograph of him walking up the ramp, the back of a military transport aircraft, last boots on the ground. Hegseth forced out General Chris Donahue, reportedly a fierce and beloved leader of our armed forces. The brain drain at the Pentagon is real. Why did this have to happen?
Yeah, this is a real own goal, a big mistake by Secretary Hegseth. So first I'll say CD, is a Delta Force commander, 82nd Airborne commander. He is a soldier, strong leader. I spent a lot of time in Ukraine working with their military, and I learned a lot about drones. When I come out, the one U.S. general that really, senior officer, that really understood drone warfare correctly and how to counter drones was General Donahue. So from my perspective, this is a big loss. The Army, I don't know what his next job should have been, but I know he should have had another job where we could use his talents leading us. And he's he's among about a dozen to 15 senior, three and four star admirals and generals removed from service without explanation by Secretary Hegseth. And I think this weakens our national security with no obvious payoff.
What's the house cleaning all about if we're losing this much experience? Is it a loyalty test?
I think for some of them, the initial ones, like the head of our Navy, Admiral Franchetti, she's fantastic. I'd known her for 35 years. She was the best person for the job, but she was a woman. And Secretary Hegseth made it clear in his 2024 book that he didn't have a lot of respect for her or in general for women serving in combat. And so I think he has a issue with that. It's misplaced. Anything he puts in place now will be changed by his successor. that we absolutely need the 51% of our society that's female to be an important part of our military across all services, in combat, in support roles, and everything. This is really misplaced effort by the Secretary of Defense.
I really appreciate you weighing in on that, Admiral, and it's always a pleasure to spend some time with you. Thank you. Retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, U.S. Navy Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.